when I got an email today that said as follows: due to the recession, for a Hanukkah present for my kids, I bought them 4 AA batteries with a note that said, toy not included. One last welcome over here. We have a special guest here tonight, the chaplain of New York Hospital of Queens, Rabbi David Keen. Who was literally there in the hospital 24/7. I had opportunity to call him this week on Sunday night when one of the Rebbetzins from Kew Gardens happened to be in the hospital around 11:30 at night, and I said to him, I'm sorry to wake you up, and he says, what do you mean? I'm here in the hospital. So thank you, Rabbi Keen, for what you do. The last final speaker, I promise, is our guest speaker of this evening. Gives me a great cover to welcome Rabbi Pesach Krum to give us some good advice.
Grateful to Rabbi Yitzchak Roh and to all the members of Hatzalah, the officers, for having invited me to come to speak to all of you. Certainly such a bakavod katzibur, the appropriate thing really is to be standing, no matter who you're speaking for, but especially for Hatzalah members. So I just want to tell you why I'm here tonight and why I'm sitting. I had this chus, and I wish it for every single one of you, to go to Eretz Yisrael this past Sukkot with 6 grandsons all around Bar Mitzvah age. It was literally the trip of a lifetime. I don't have to tell you, Bar Mitzvah kids are very excited. We went to many gedolim, we went to many kvarim, we did jeeping, everything that you could imagine that a kid, an early teenager, would want to do. The last night was Simchas Torah, was already Os Yantif for the people in Eretz Yisrael, and I said to the kids, let's go to Mir. We'll go there to the Akofas. I sent the kids early, and I was walking down a few steps with my wife out of the apartment. It was dark, steps, cobblestone steps, and I have to tell you, in Eretz Yisrael. And somehow, for the life of me, I still cannot understand how in the world this thing happened. But I missed the last step, and I fell. And the way I fell, I tried to brace myself. I just could not move. I was almost like paralyzed. And I thought that I had 2 cramps in both of my knees and my legs. And I said to my wife, just let me sit here for a minute and I'll just get up. But then I realized my knees weren't connected. I couldn't get up. I just literally could not move. I could not move my legs. What happened was that I ripped my quadriceps of both legs. Don't ask me how it happened. And I ripped the ligaments of both legs. And of course, my wife couldn't lift me off the floor. And we called Hatzalah, one of the neighbors called Hatzalah. And I know that he's not going to appreciate, he's not here, but I'm going to say it anyway. A.J. Rowe, who's Rabbi Yitzchak's brother, his younger brother. A.J. Rowe came running, and he took me to Terem, and he said, listen, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to be with you. And he took me now, you have to understand, it was Os Yantif. So every single emergency that any Israeli had, they were coming to the hospital that night. So Terem was like a zoo. And as I'm waiting, and A.J. Rowe tells me, I'm going to get you the best orthopedist. He's just very busy, but you'll just have to wait. Along comes Dov Rowe. You heard of Dov Rowe? Dov Rowe was in Eretz Yisrael for Yantif. And I just cannot begin to explain what it means when you're frightened, when you take a look at that orthopedist and an Israeli finesse said, you're going to need surgery on both legs, you know, just plain out. You know, like real, just telling it the way it is. I was taken to Hadassah Ein Kerem. You should never have to go there. And it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, thank God they're Jewish and they're Israelis, otherwise we would have a few words. And I waited literally till 3 o'clock in the morning, and sitting next to me was Dov Rowe, just reassuring me that he was going to be with me no matter what. 3 o'clock in the morning, they put me into a soft cast. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I come back to the apartment the next morning. The Hatzolah guys there from Eretz Yisrael drove me. I come back to my house, 12, 1 o'clock, Dov Rowe is there again. I said, Dov, didn't you go to Tel Aviv for a business appointment? He said, yeah, but I just wanted to find out how you're doing. And then Eli Rowe walks in. You know, like I'm so besieged by the Rowe's, it's unbelievable. And Eli says to me, how are you getting back? Now, I want to tell you about something. You should never have to use this, but every single one of you who travels. As we were standing in the hospital with A.J. Rowe the next day, my wife said to him, you know, I believe that we have something called MedJet insurance. Now, I'm sure most of you have never heard it, but there is a company, go online and you'll see, MedJet Assist, it's Medical Jet Assist. They promise you, no matter where you are in the world, they will bring you back with a private jet and a medic to accompany you, wherever you are in the world, to get you home to your home country. 5 years ago, my wife saw an ad and figured, you know, I travel, she'll buy it. She didn't even remember that she had it. And then I said to her in the hospital, don't we have MedJet? She said, yeah, where am I going to get the number? AJ pulls out his computer, and 1 second he's got the number. My wife was on the phone with them for a few hours and convinced them, why do you have to send a jet on Tuesday from England with a medic? We have Eli Rowe. So the guy wants to know, who is Eli Rowe? I said, well, he's the son of Dove, don't you know? So we convinced them that Eli Rowe is a paramedic and probably knows more than any medic that they're going to send. And I just want to tell you, you know, the Rowe's are such humble people. And of course they don't want me to say this, but you know, this is not the Last Supper and I hope I'll be able to speak again. So I just want to tell you what kind of tzaddik, not only Eli is, but what his wife Chedvi is. You see, Eli was supposed to go back on Sunday with his wife and children from Eretz Yisrael. But because my wife convinced MedJet that Eli Rowe was smarter than anyone else, they paid $8,000 for me and Eli to fly business class with Delta Motza Shabbos. So you don't know what it is to fly with Eli and to listen to all his stories from Tel Aviv and all his jet plane stories and whatever. But I want to tell you, and this is so humiliating to talk about, but this is what makes him great. When you can't move your legs, and you have to use the facilities, and you need a guy who's going to be upstanding in business class holding a blanket that serves as your curtain, to do it with such dignity, and such finesse, and such love, is just incredible. So what happens? I finally get to Delta in New York, and who's waiting for me? Yitzhak Rowe. It's unbelievable. So from AJ, to Dov, to Eli, to Yitzchak. Yitzchak takes me from Delta straight. We go straight to Joint Diseases. And the first thing I do is I say, I want to change my family name to Rowe. But in all seriousness, Eli already had spoken to his dear friend Mark Silverman. Some of you know who he is. Just the most wonderful surgeon, the most wonderful tzaddik. Within an hour, he was there on Sunday morning and assured me that if I was up to surgery, he would put together a team by Sunday afternoon. It was just incredible. Within 72 hours of my fall in Eretz Yisrael, I was operated on both knees. And of course, who's waiting for me the next day in the hospital? Dov Rowe. It's just unbelievable. And I can't, so of course, 3 days later, when I come home, you know, I came home 12 days later, Yitzchak Rowe calls and says, would you speak for Hatzolah, you know, on Hanukkah? He knows how to get a guy, right? So, of course, the answer was yes, right? How could I say no? I owe them everything. My family owes them everything. And that's the reason I'm still in braces. I can walk, Baruch Hashem. I'm doing Brisson every day. Those of you who see me here in Queens or wherever, I'm able to speak. But I'm able to walk now without crutches. But in public, I take crutches just to be on the safe side. And I still have the braces. Mark Silverman is an Orthodox guy, but he's very conservative, if you know what I mean. And he's right. You know, he won't let me go out, you know, and take the braces off. They've got to be on for another 5 weeks. I can only bend my knees now, Baruch Hashem, 40%. But the idea is that, oh, by the way, I just noticed somebody in the audience, and I know she's going to hate this, but my wife is here, and without her, I could not have made it, really. We were supposed to go to a wedding an hour ago because Ellie said I was going to speak at 8:45, but I didn't know we're on Chicago time. But anyway, the idea is that there's no amount of Akaras HaTayyib that I could express properly, not only to the Rove family, but to all the members of Hatzalah, whether it was here in New York or in Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem literally should bless every single one of you, because I know what all these guys did for me, you would do for anybody else. I just want to tell you this. We know that when the Rabbanu Shel Olam spoke to Avraham Avinu, the first words that he said to him was, Lech Lecha, go from your father's house, you're going to travel on a journey. And then Hashem says to him, Ve'eschol l'goy godol, I'm going to make you into a great nation. Vavarechecha, I'm going to bless you. Vagadol shemecha, I'll make your name great. And then he says two words, and these two words are so important to every single man and woman in this room. Because Rav Shabshir Rafal Hirsch understands these words in a way that should affect us forever. The next words are Beheye Bracha, you will be a blessing. But Rav Shabshir Rafal Hirsch says that's not what it means. Not that you'll be a blessing, not that you're going to be blessed, but you must become a blessing. A Yid, that's the directive. Every Yid has to be a blessing for someone else. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, in his Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, his son writes, my father used to get angry at me. And he would tell me, how come you don't get involved in the problems of other people? And he would say, this is what man is all about. Listen to these three words. Lori la'atzmoi nivra. You are not created for yourself. Every one of us must look at ourselves. There are many, many people in this room that I know. And many of you are so multi-talented. But God didn't give you these talents so that you should become rich or famous. Hashem gave you these talents so that you should become a brocha for other people. Veheye brocha. And if there's any group in Klal Yisrael that fits this bill of a Yehyei Brocha, it's the people of Hatzalah. I know from my own mother, my late mother who passed away just 3 years ago, twice, once when I was out of town, my wife came running 4 o'clock in the morning, and my mother had what all of you know as CHF, congestive heart failure. Twice, Hatzalah saved my mother's life. How could a person thank I don't know if Moshe Lederer was on that call, or Moshe was on that call, Howie Siegel, others who from Kew Gardens, literally, I mean, what could you say to somebody who saved your mother's life twice, and we had her for a few months afterwards, Baruch Hashem a million times over. Again, Veheye Bracha, that's what it's all about, Loi La'atzmai Nivra. But I want to say that Veheye Bracha, that goes on the wives as well. How many times have the wives of Hatzalah members been stuck at graduations alone? Been stuck Friday night at a Suda alone? Stuck at a Seder alone? Or in the middle of shopping, somebody says, you know, they just got a call, and they leave the wife. After all, they've been planning this whole week to go shopping that night, and then they leave. The idea is, Avraham Avinu taught us in the Torah, when Avraham said that on their Eshkol and Mamre, they get the same chelik of the spoils of war, even though they didn't go out to fight the war, because they were home watching. It says, V'chaver of Yeshu Alakelem, Rashi tells us. They sat and they kept the home guard. They kept the gear. And so all the wives should know that you have such bracha, you have such tremendous chusin, because without your encouragement, your husbands would not be able to do what they do. And you deserve equal schar, because it's without you, it never would happen for Hatzalah. I want to tell you something that happened last night. One of the Hatzalah members came over to me before. He does not want his name mentioned. But I just want to show you how great all of you are, men and women, and show you that your children learn from you. Last night, a fellow who's sitting here tonight got a call like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. His radio went off, and the little boy heard it, and he woke up. And then he woke up, and he wrote a note to his father. And he left this note to his father, which his father read this morning. His father is sitting amongst us. Dear Tati, even though when you run out on a call, we may not appreciate it, but we know your patients do. That makes a tremendous roshem. What all of you are doing are serving such an extraordinary example to your children. And you have to know that you should be proud of that. Sometimes, as was mentioned before, you go out on a call, and it's a call that you've done 4 or 5 times to the same person, but you should know it's a mitzvah every single time, and it's hashpa that you're having on your children. I want you to know, especially the women who sometimes may feel frustrated, I want you to know that there's such schar for those who go out to do the chesed and those who allow them to do the chesed. You know what Chazal teach us? How are we going to be saved? How can we be saved from the pangs of Mashiach? We know that we're in the last steps before Mashiach. And the Gemara tells us, Yaseh b'Torah u'gemilas chasodim. Get involved in Torah and in gemilas chesed. And that goes for the husbands and the wives who allow them to do it. All of you should know that you'll be blessed and you'll be saved from the terrible pangs of Mashiach. I want to tell you a remarkable story and something that should give us tremendous chizuk. There's a wonderful, wonderful sefer that Rav Palm wrote. I remember when he gave it to me. It's called Atorah L'Melech and it's written in Ivrit Kala. Everyone should get it. It's written in very simple Hebrew. And he writes on the Parshas, and he writes on different essays and different thoughts, and he tells a story that you could see how embarrassed he is of writing this story as he's telling it. It's on page 120, and he tells a story that happened in 1976. He was in New Hampshire with his wife, and all of a sudden he felt dehydrated, and he thought that he was going to faint. So he said to his wife, I need a citrus fruit. I need a citrus fruit. I feel that I'm going to faint. I'm dehydrating. It was the last day of the vacation. She had nothing in the refrigerator anymore. She had cleaned up. They were leaving the next morning. So she ran to the neighbor. And he writes in the sefer, the only thing that the neighbor had was a lemon. And Rav Palm's Rebbetzin ran in with this lemon. And those of us who knew Rav Palm knew he was a very quiet, edel person. But he writes, I ripped open the lemon. I ripped it. And I sucked out the juices because I was so desperate. I thought I was going to faint. And I was able to revive myself. And he said, the next day or a couple days later, he met one of his sons. And he said to his sons, you know, the other day, I felt dehydrated. And I asked Mama to get me a citrus fruit, and the only thing she could get was a lemon from the next door neighbor. And I ripped open the lemon. I was so embarrassed the way I did it. I never saw anybody rip open a lemon like that. And then he said, oh my. As I was talking to my son, I realized an incident that happened 20 years ago. And he tells this story that he went to visit a Rav who was in a hospice. The Rav was dying. And he says the Rav was from the Bronx. He doesn't say the Rav's name. He said, I wanted to go visit him. I didn't know how to bring him. So I figured I'll bring him some fresh oranges. I come into the hospice to where that Rav was lying, and he wasn't in the mood. But next to him was a man who was never so sick he was paralyzed from the neck down. He could move his hands, but he couldn't talk anymore. So I turned to him, Rav Palm says, and I asked him, would you like to have the oranges? And the man grabbed the oranges, ripped it open, and he sucked out the juices. The poor guy was probably so thirsty, but he couldn't get the nurse to get him anything. Maybe he couldn't reach the emergency bell or whatever. And then Rav Palm said, I realized something. I did a wonderful thing that day. I gave that man sustenance. And he was able to have that citrus fruit. Hashem should have paid me back right away. But he waited. He waited 20 years till I needed it. And then when I needed it, he brought back to memory that which I did 20 years ago. And Rav Palm writes something that every one of you, every man and woman in this room should understand. And he brings something for the Baruch Chaim HaKodesh, which is written in the Aseres HaDibros. V'oisa chesed la'ofim. Listen to this. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu meshaleh lekol chazdei tekef miyad. Hashem doesn't pay you back right away. When you do a good thing, Hashem doesn't pay you back right away. Ela boicha le'oifin piroyen hanos lo'dedores. Sometimes Hashem waits. And when you save that person, And you look around and you think, you know, I did a great thing. I went out 2 o'clock in the morning and I saved that guy. And now he's going to have a home life with his family. How come Hashem isn't paying me back yet? The answer is, Hashem is not going to pay you back necessarily. He's going to pay back your children and your grandchildren. How many times does it happen? We're driving on the highway and you feel you're going to get into the accident. You can just feel that impact. And the last second, you stop on a dime. You know why? Because 35 years ago, your Bubby did something special. And Hashem said, I'm not going to waste it on a second home in Monticello. I'm going to wait till her grandson is on a highway. And that's when he's going to be saved. That's what I'm going to say. That's what the Bubby would want. Or how many times do we feel some other tragedy is going to happen? All of a sudden, it doesn't happen. Why? Because your grandfather did something 30 years ago. What about that kid who didn't go to Sabarno's that day? He was supposed to be on the number one bus, but he went on the number four bus. How did that happen? Why did that happen? Because his grandfather did something special 25 years ago. And Hashem said, I'm not going to waste it on a camera, on an SUV. I'll wait until his grandson has to be saved. That's how you should look at things. Every single one of you who goes out on a call, Hashem owes you big time. So you may think, Hashem owes me big time, so how come I'm fighting financially? I've got all these problems. Why can't I have a beautiful home my neighbor has? The answer is, Hashem's not wasting it on a house. Hashem's not wasting it on something that's so mundane. He's saving your child. Abigail, when he was saved, you know why? Because you have a great Zadie, or you have a great Bobby. That's why it happened. That's what Hashem was waiting for. When that child has to be saved, I'm going to look back at the records. So every one of you that goes out on the call knows that you're putting money, in a sense, spiritual money, into a bank account. And eventually, Hashem's going to pay you back. A lot of us have much good in this world. Ein Hanami, that's wonderful. But sometimes we get impatient. I want to tell you the lesson from our pop. Continue doing all your good. The wives should continue encouraging the husbands because it's payback time. Hashem pays back. Now every single one of us knows great, great stories of Hatzalah. You know, I want to tell you something. Something that should give us chizuk. I had the opportunity to speak a number of years ago in the Hatzalah dinner in Muncie. So you know how these dinners go. A couple guys are given an award, and everybody thanks Hashem that they're able to do. They're doing more for, you know, themselves than they are for other people. And then one guy got up, and it was just incredible. A 40-year-old guy, trim-looking fellow, and he says something that just stunned everybody. He said, "You're looking at someone who went through Trias HaMeisim." This guy was a handsome-looking guy, looked so trim, couldn't believe it. Nobody could believe what he was talking about. Now he said something that I'm going to tell you, you will never, ever daven the same way after we finish this little episode. Watch this. Incredible what he said. He said it was just maybe 8 months before. He was in his house, all of a sudden he had a massive heart attack. Young guy, 39 years old. He has this massive heart attack, they call Hatzalah, the first unit comes with defibrillators and all, they cannot save him. They call a second unit, they call a third unit. His wife is sitting there, she's crying, she's bawling. Hatzalah says, "We can't do anything, we've tried everything. We're going to just take him to the ambulance." She says, and they tell her, "You just sit here and say to him, we're going. But three units are there, they cannot save the guy." She says, "I'm coming with, let me come with in the ambulance." She takes her to him, she comes into the ambulance. On the way, somehow, they're able to save him. Now listen to this, you can all look it up, because many of you here are Talmid HaChachamim. Tonight, if you have the Ritva, open up the very first Ritva in the Sefer Tainus. Listen to what he says. You'll never daven Machal Kechayim the same way after this. He says, in Atah Gibor, we mention Trias HaMeisim three times. Atah Gibor Yelam Hashem, Mechayim Meisim Atah, Machal Kechayim Mechesed, Mechayim Meisim, V'nevan Atah V'hafkes Meisim. He said, everybody makes a mistake. Everybody thinks that Trias HaMeisim, referring to over here in the Shemoneh Esrei, is the future. It's not true. It's only the last one. He says, you know what the second one is? He says, sometimes, the first one is Parnassa. The second one, he says, that sometimes, Odom Shekoroiv Kitzam Lamoves, there's some guys that are at the doorstep of death. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marach Yimeim Hashem sends them a brocha at the last second. The Yishlach Dvore V'Yipar, and he saves them. He sends a Hatzalah guy, and the guy saves him. Why? Because the guy had a certain schus. And he says, that's what
Tchias HaMeisim is about. That's why it says, V'chai HaMeisim V'rach Marab HaSerech Lech V'Roi V'Choylem. V'Neman Atal Lichach Tchias HaMeisim. Only the third one is talking about future Tchias HaMeisim. So what Mr. Aminoff was saying, every single one of you is involved in Tchias HaMeisim. There are people you can never, ever give up. Three units were there. They took them on the way with defibrillators, with medications, with everything. That's what Machal Kachayim is telling you. Machal Kachayim should give every single one of us kids, you never, ever give up, because you can really be involved in that Tchias HaMeisim. So I want to tell you, I'm sure the older fellows here know how Hatzolah started, but this is one of my favorite stories. And the reason it's one of my favorite stories is because it shows that when one guy has an idea, you can change the world. Every single one of you. There are so many great people in this room. There's so many problems in Israel. Don't be humble. Go with an idea that you have and you can save so many people in so many difficult situations. There's a Chassidish guy who told me this story. His name is Herschel Weber. He was learning in a kollel in Williamsburg. One day he comes outside from the kollel. He's walking down. All of a sudden the guy says, "Oh, I feel a pain." And the guy falls. Herschel Weber didn't know anything how to help him. He's yelling and screaming for the police. The police finally, by the time they get to the police, he watched this guy come a white face to a blue face, and the guy died right in front of him. And then, when the police came, one of the cops said to the other, "If we would have been here 5 minutes earlier, we could have saved this guy." Herschel Weber hears that. He decides, you know what? He's going to buy an oxygen. He's going to go to learn first aid. How could that be? Nobody, no yid can help another yid. If I would have known first aid, maybe I could have helped this guy. So he goes with two other guys, and one guy's name is Herschel Kopf, who had a bakery, another guy was Yoel Glantz. He had a cleaning store, and they figured they'll all take first aid, they all have little oxygen tanks, at least they'll be able to help some yid. What happens one night? A lady, an old lady, sleeping with her husband, and the guy dies in his sleep. She didn't realize. The next morning, she wakes up, she sees her husband's not moving. And she starts yelling, "Oh, man, what happened?" And you know, in the morning, the voice carries, she's screaming, "Get help, get help." She thought she could still bring him back alive. She didn't know how long he was dead. And somebody says, "Get Herschel Weber, get Herschel Weber." He comes running with his little oxygen tank. If he takes one look at the guy's dead. He's been dead 5 hours already. There's nothing he can do. But by that time, a big crowd gathered in Williamsburg. You will not believe this part of the story. Herschel Weber told me, by that time he goes outside, he says a few words nebuch to the new almana, and as he's walking downstairs, he hears one yid say to the other yid, "Did this them Herschel? Edom Gehargit. You see that Herschel? He killed him." Why did they think he killed him? Because what? He came with an oxygen tank. What do you think he is anyway? Should have brought a real doctor. Of course, he didn't kill him. The guy was dead 5 hours. He said he felt so bad. How could one yid accuse another yid of killing somebody? You don't even know what you're talking about. He told me he did not stop crying for 3 hours. The humiliation and the accusation, which was not true, and of course if one guy yells it, everybody's going to believe it. 2 days later, he goes to the Satmar Rebbe, and he says to the Satmar Rebbe, "Rebbe, I believe after what I saw, that we should get a bunch of fellows that should be able to help people with medical problems. Rebbe, what do you think about this?" And the Rebbe takes out a Shari Tshuva, you can look it up, Shari Gimel, Ois Ayin Aleph. And the Rebbe reads to him, V'toy v'nochem yoyk, it is very good. Liyos b'chol ir v'ir, there should be every city, misnagrim, there should be volunteers, v'namaskilim, intelligent people. Liyos n'chaynim, u'mazamonim l'chol dvar hatzola. Get ready to help anyway, because Isha Isha Yisrael Shurim Batah, when a man or woman is in Tzar. He says, get an organization started and call it Hatzola. That's how Hatzolah got its name, from this Shari Tshuva. Because Herschel Weber, one guy, had the idea. How many times have we thought of an idea and we let it go, and then later people make this idea and it works? You think, "Oh man, I thought of that. Why didn't we go with it?" You have an idea, believe in it. Believe in yourself. Most of us are so humble. You have to have self-esteem. The Tzidkas HaTzadik says you got to believe in three things. You got to believe in Hashem, you got to believe in Torah, you got to believe in yourself. This guy, one guy started Hatzolah. Imagine the chosid that he has. My favorite story from Hatzolah. Young kibber and shul and flatbush. A guy is so hot. It's so hot, it's so stuffy, there's no air conditioning. And the guy passes out. And they call a code blue because everybody thought he died. Nobody knew what the truth was yet. The guy wasn't moving. So they call a code blue. All the guys, they whip off their tamales and they all come running to this shul. They all come running to the shul, Yom Kippur. They take the guy out on a stretcher. He comes outside. Ah, he's got fresh air. He opens up his eyes. He sees all the guys standing around with white kitlach. He looks around and he says in Yiddish, Binnis Yonoyvin? Am I upstairs? He thought he was seeing Malachim. He couldn't believe it. Truth is, he was seeing Malachim. Oh, you guys really are angels. You know what happened once in Spanish Harlem? You won't believe this. Hatzolah remember telling me. They got a call to Spanish Harlem. They living in Spanish Harlem. Hey, but you know, the guy's yelling and screaming on the phone. They got a call. They come upstairs. It's a Chinese guy. They can't even understand him. They don't even speak English. And they want to know, what are you talking about? And he takes out a quart of milk. It's sour. Hatzolah had an advertisement on Chol Yisrael. This guy bought Chol Yisrael by mistake. He thought that's what he complained to. That's why he called Hatzolah. Did you believe that? Here's another one. Dobro's favorite story. You won't believe this. Dobro's traveling back from Eretz Yisrael once, and there's, you know, they're over the ocean already, and some guy, you know, is having a heart attack. So the stewardess is panicking, and they run up to the pilot, and the pilot wants to know, is there a cardiologist on board? Is there a doctor on board? Nobody answers. So Dobro figures, listen, I'm not a doctor, but I am an Hatzolah, whatever. So he runs up, now this was in his first years of Hatzolah. He runs up to the pilot, that's before 9/11, you can still do that. And he says, listen, you know, I'm a Hatzolah member, however he explains it. He said, call the headquarters, you know, he gives them the number of Williamsburg, and, you know, we'll be able to find out what to do. So they call Williamsburg, you know, that's where the headquarters are, and the pilot says, this is El Al calling. And he says, yeah, I'm George Washington, and he, you know, we're in El Al. What are you talking about? So Dole says, no, tell him Q4. So they call him back again. And I think, what, Q, whatever he was. Dole says he was 4. Okay. Anyway, Q5, whatever. He says, tell him I'm Q5. Listen to what the guy on Williamsburg says. He says, you need this certain medication. He says, where are we going to get it? He says, don't you realize a plane, an El Al plane, is a walking drugstore. You've got to wake up every single woman there. And when you go through their pocketbooks, you're going to find the medication you need. Did you believe that? And sure enough, they found it. So the next time you're at El Al, just go through the pocketbooks. You'll find what you need. And of course, as they're landing in Halifax, the woman cardiologist wakes up. She was on board the whole time. She just slept through the whole thing. But I want to tell you one more thing, and maybe with that we'll close. You know, this past summer, I went on a trip. The past few years, I've had the great sports of taking literally over 100 people every year to different parts of Europe that were once great Jewish centers. We went to Lithuania one year, we went to Poland, we went to Morocco, unbelievable places. And last year we went to Italy, and people were thinking, what in the world is Italy? I was thinking the same thing. I mean, which Jews lived in Italy? But once you start doing the research, you see the Masilsi Sharm, the Ramchal was born in Italy. The Barzanura was born there. The Sforno was born there. There's a lot to talk about. And we're making now a video. We're looking for sponsors. Anybody wants to sponsor? You know, it's a big political announcement. Get your name on the video, whatever. But anyway, and we talked about all the various Gedolim that lived in Italy. The last day of the trip was the most incredible day of the trip because we ended up in Rome. And I was planning this, that this would be a build-up to this day. Do you know that in Rome, there's something called the Arch of Titus? The Arch of Titus. Titus was a Rasha. He was the one who killed so many thousands of Yidden at the second Beis HaMikdash. He destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. He took thousands of prisoners. And this arch that he built to himself as a legacy is 51 feet high. It's monstrous. And you come outside this arch. Some people say you shouldn't go underneath the arch. Rav David Cohen, not you, different Rav David Cohen, holds that you're allowed to go under the arch, but whatever. People stood under the arch, and we started singing Habeit Yishamayim Re'ei. You know, Amish's song, it's so sad. Take a look. You see, Yid Nevach, Hashem is loud. I always wondered, why did Hashem allow these Romans to have that arch that depicts how Yid were prisoners? What's the purpose of that? What can we learn from it? And then we sang Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. And then I told him a remarkable story. I told him a story about an American correspondent who had once been commissioned to write an article about Hadrian's Wall. Hadrian was Hadrian Yonas. He killed Rabbi Akiva. His wall was built in Newcastle, by the River Tyne on the northern part of England, because that was the beginning of the Roman Empire. That was the northern part, so the barbarians wouldn't be able to come down and attack. So this guy is supposed to write a report. He's a Jewish guy. He doesn't know anything about Yiddish guy. He comes there. It's not a wall like a wall. It's not even 73 miles long. It's like Shea Stadium. People are picking apart the stones, you know, keeping it as souvenirs. It's nothing. So somebody said to him, you're a Jewish guy. You don't know anything about Judaism. Why'd you want to see a Jewish neighborhood around here? He says, Newcastle. What kind of Jewish neighborhood? Does anybody know what new Jewish neighborhood is near Newcastle? The Gates of Yeshiva. They take him to Rav Leib Gurewitz. Listen to what Rav Leib tells him. Rav Leib sees right away that this guy knows nothing. So he calls him in. He says, come here, I want to show you something. And he takes him into the Beis Medrash. And the guy sees 200 guys yelling and screaming, waving their hands, arguing, big books, little books. They never saw anything like it. He says, Rabbi, what is this? He says, you were commissioned to write a book, an article about Hadrian. He doesn't exist. His children don't exist. His wall doesn't exist. But he killed Rabbi Akiva. You see these 200 guys here? They are the spiritual descendants of Rabbi Akiva. And not only that, they're quoting Rabbi Akiva. The one that you were supposed to write about, Hadrian. He's not around, but Rabbi Akiva's around. And there are 200 other places just like this, all over the world. And then I told the people that the Ponovitch Rov once came in 1953 and stood by the Arch of Titus and said, Titus, Titus, you thought that you were going to live forever. You're gone. We, the Jews, are here. But then I pointed to the people, to that arch, and I said, look what they're carrying. Does anybody know? Does anybody know what the arch, what those Jews are carrying? They're carrying the menorah. And I was wondering, why did Hashem make it? Why did Hashem make it? That's Dove Rowe. He wants us to stop talking about it. Why did Hashem make it that the menorah is that thing which they engraved? And I believe the answer is, Kiner mitzvah b'Torah or. Hashem wanted to show us that this journey that we have in Klal Yisrael, the only way that the journey continues is if you have that Ner mitzvah b'Torah or. And so I just want to say one thing to all Hatzolah members. Hatzolah members, you do great stuff, there's no question about it. But Hanukkah is a time when we get together, not only just to have the sushi and to have all the other wonderful things that you had here tonight. We get together to elevate ourselves. It's an idea of Moisef HaHoylech. Tonight you have to make a commitment, not only to the patients and to the people that you go visit in times of emergency, but we need self-elevation, Moisef HaHoylech. The menorah represents kiner mitzvah, yes, but Torah or. Many times what happens is when a guy is so involved in a mitzvah, we forget about learning, we forget about Torah, and we forget about our children. That's what hurts the wives more than anything else. When the Hatzolah guy comes home and he's so exhausted and has no time to learn with his children. The children are the greatest investment that we have. The only reason that Klal Yisrael exists is not because it's chesed, that's important. But it's only the menorah, which is kinei mitzvah b'Torah or. Tonight we must make a commitment of moisef b'hoylach. We have to make a commitment to spend more time with our families, to make a commitment to spend more time with our children, and to make a commitment to Torah and Yerushalayim. You know, a yid is two parts, ruchnius and gashmius. I just want to end just with this thing. A Hasidic Shavart that is so brilliant and is just incredible. I always thought that the dreidel was something that was child's play. Until I saw something in the Bnei Yisosla. The Bnei Yisosla tells us those letters along the dreidel, the Nun Gimel Shin Hei that's on all your tables. You know what they stand for? Nun stands for Nefesh. That was the first golos when Bavel, when the Bavlim destroyed, the Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the soul of Klal Yisrael was broken. Nun is Nefesh. Gimel is Guf. That's the body. Haman wanted to kill the Jewish body, make no difference if they were going to convert or not. Shin is Seichel, the Yevonim, they wanted us to assimilate, to change our mindset. The Hay is today Hakar. All over the world, you have all kinds of different goals. In some places, they're trying to kill us. Some places, they're trying to assimilate us, like it is in America. Hamas is trying to kill us. The Nun Gimel Shin Hei, the dreidel spins and spins, and then at the end, it falls. And what's the only thing that's left? That's Klal Yisrael. And he says, the Nun Gimel Shin Hei stands for Goishna. Where did Yehuda, in this week's Parsha, Yehuda was sent to Goishna. Why did Yaakov send him to Goishna? to build a yeshiva. That's what Klal Yisrael is all about. L'hoyreis l'fanav, to learn. And you know, the Nun Gimel Shin Hei, Krishna, it's Begamatria 358, Mashiach is Begamatria 358. Let's remember, tonight it's Moisav Arlach, it's the last night, it's the highest Madrig of Hanukkah, Zeis Hanukkah we're going to read tomorrow. Let's make a commitment not only to our clients and our patients, but a commitment to our families, to become people that are involved with our children and with our learning, and in that way, that dreidel will eventually fall, but Klal Yisrael will remain, and we'll be zecha to see Mashiach. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Kohl.